You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we return here with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I'm your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire, back with me here today to dive into yet another Ravens victory, this time being a 16-10 win over the Cleveland Browns in Week 12. Is Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beat down here on Taco Tuesday. Spencer, another grinded out game for this Ravens team, but they get the job done. How you doing?
Doing quite well. It was a late game. I was in attendance, so obviously a little Monday morning spookies, but overall, the Ravens defense continues to turn out some pretty respectable performances. Even going back to the Dolphins game, you know, they kind of silenced the Dolphins for most of the game, even though they were put in some tough positions. Then they go to Chicago, take care of business, come back home, and completely blanket a Browns rushing attack that a lot of people would say might be the best in football at this point. So the Ravens defense stepped up to the task. Lamar Jackson had a sloppy game, and a couple bounces didn't go the Ravens' way. They failed to be able to stick a dagger into the Browns quite a few times. There were some dropped interceptions, overthrown touchdowns, some untimely mistakes and penalties and things of that nature. But again, the Ravens have shown when the script doesn't go the way they want it to exactly, when they miss opportunity, they can continue to press on. They continue to be a goldfish, as Ted Lasso would say. So they've been able to ultimately show that they can finish games and close games out way more often than not. And they're battle-tested in the fourth quarter at this point in time. They're confident in what they can do, and they've been able to make some noise there. So they're now sitting at first place in the AFC, and it's an exciting time to cover the Baltimore Ravens, to be a fan of the team, to play for the team, to coach the team, anything of the sort, with the way that the Ravens have made lemonade out of the injury lemons this year.
Yeah, it's been incredible what John Harbaugh and the players and the coaching staff have been able to do this season with those injuries. As you talked about, Spencer, and in this game in particular, they overcame the mistakes of their quarterback in Lamar Jackson, who did not have his best game, admittedly, on Sunday night, threw four interceptions, completed 20 of 32 passes, did have a touchdown in there to Mark Andrews on a very impressive play. He did have some nice throws, but, you know, the big storyline is the interceptions. The Ravens end up snapping a 52-game losing streak dating back to 2015 and the regular season in the playoffs, are the first team to overcome four interceptions since 2015 by their quarterback. And so, Spencer, what do you attribute those interceptions to? Was this a case of Lamar Jackson being a bit rusty after not playing in Week 11 with that illness? Was he just making poor reads? Was he a little bit of trying to do too much in there? What was the reason, do you think, for these interceptions, and how can he improve on them going forward?
Well, it's a little bit of everything. I think that Lamar Jackson's been overly risk-averse at times in his young career, and at this point he has decided to push the ball downfield more, to take more chances. In the meta conversation, then breaking it down to an individual level, the Ravens have, wanted him to continue doing that, but going to these interceptions on a pick-by-pick basis, one of them, he's trying to throw a strike to Mark Andrews, and Rashad Bateman puts a paw on it, and then ricochets and caroms up off of a Browns defender and falls right into the lap of a DB. So that if you want to say that makes Lamar Jackson rusty or whatever, it was what it was. Another one, he misses a robber, misses a lurker. We've seen him have that happen a couple times. Tyrann Mathieu, the same kind of situation happened earlier in the year. There's been a couple of those, maybe three at this point in time. So that's on him. That's something he needs to be more aware of and able to key on defenders a little bit better. And that one was definitely on Lamar Jackson. But then the next one ends up being a situation where it looked like Mark Andrews was going to break away from the DB, and Lamar Jackson kind of wanted to throw back towards inside. And I think that was an example of what we've seen from Lamar Jackson not wanting to hold the ball as long as he has at times and be a little bit too hesitant to get the ball out. And some of these like half pump fakes where he's trying to clutch the ball back down and regather himself and not being throw ready and having to scramble a little bit more than he might like. So I think he was trying to get the ball out on time, and he wasn't able to. So he ends up taking a hit and throwing an interception there. That one was bad. And then, you can definitely put both of those on Lamar Jackson. And then he tries to, throw up a moon ball, a moon pie for Mark Andrews, who had made some outstanding plays in this game already to this point. And John Johnson is able to kind of face guard, which is completely fine. And I like when calls go in favor of the defense, so I'm not mad about that at all. But he's able to face guard and not really grab Mark Andrews' arms or anything. And Mark Andrews didn't super aggressively go attack the ball or work back to the point where it would have forced Johnson to. And Johnson ends up with the football. So two of them, a little bit of bad luck. Two of them, pretty bad on his part. He's thrown more interceptions to this point already through only, for him, 10 starts than he has in his career. So, again, pushing the ball downfield, being more aggressive, throwing the ball more. He's made more mistakes therein, and it's some correctable things, some unlucky things. So, I think he's thrown an interception in 8 different games now, and he needs to continue to improve there. I mean, the one that he had to John Johnson downfield was a funny play. And we've seen a couple, you know, kind of crazy plays on some of these picks this year. And again, you know, if you want to go throw the ball deep to Mark Andrews and let him go make a play, he tries to kind of sneak behind John Johnson. John Johnson just sticks both of his hands up in the air and tries to swat downward. And the ball just kind of hits between the two of them and falls in his lap. So I like the fact that Lamar Jackson's throwing up some balls for guys like Mark Andrews. I'd like to see him throw up some more for Rashad Bateman and let those guys go make plays vertically down the field. So they're going to continue to press onward. I think that Jackson needs to improve communicating with Andrews and some of the other receivers on those timings of breaks. And I do, again, like to see him getting the ball out in the rhythm of the pass game more often, because it's kind of thrown things on and there's too many off-schedule plays. And we also saw him throw the ball away a couple times in this game. He's taken too many sacks this year. He took one early on where he kind of pressed the issue and attacks forward at a clean pocket where they were playing a contained rush, and then Myles Garrett ends up with a sack. So I think there was some good in this one, and there was a lot of bad in this one. Definitely one of Lamar Jackson's lesser performances. Another one where Mark Andrews, it's a play where people will probably recall his face mask getting grabbed as he was running in between the second and third level, and then uncovers and is completely wide open. And then Lamar Jackson overshoots him. So he hasn't played in a couple weeks. You can give him that excuse, and he hasn't practiced much the last couple of weeks. He said himself, you know, that he played like, you know, expletive, and he has to get back in the lab, and had some nice comments in terms of accountability. I know his teammates really love that, but you can be a really nice guy all the time, but if you throw 4 interceptions and don't come back and have a really clean performance afterwards, or go on a little bit of a run here without turning the ball over or making plays where the ball should get turned over, you batted passes, tip balls happen, especially if your own receiver tips it, but gotta eventually be able to control the football, not turn it over, not put your defense in these bad situations. Luckily, the Browns are a very one-dimensional offense right now that can't really establish a consistent passing attack. So they weren't really able to take advantage and make the Ravens pay on these interceptions. And the Ravens defense deserves a ton of credit as well. But again, 2 batted passes in this game for Jackson, a tipped one off of his own receiver's hands. John Johnson makes a play, and then a couple bad kind of communicative or reads, however you want to put it. So you don't want to see that again. You hope that that is definitely the low point of the year in terms of turning the football over, and he needs to be better, plain and simple. So he took the accountability for it. Words can make people happy, but at the end of the day, he needs to stop turning the football over.
Yeah, and Spencer, we've had the conversations in years past about those plays where, you know, if we're like, well, this needle took the ball in the air and it's an interception, or this guy will do this, or this guy will do that. But we've also had the conversations about him, you know, whether it's the fumbles, his rookie season, those were out of control. We talked about, you know, kind of how heading into his MVP campaign, he had to cut down on those, and he did. So now we have a situation this year where, as you mentioned, he has thrown more interceptions through his first 10 starts than he did last season. And he just has to do some better protecting of the football, but all those interceptions, some of those just come on wacky plays. There's not a ton you can do about them, but controlling the football and giving the offense opportunities to score. There were multiple times towards the end of that first half where you would think, all right, you know, they could go down, get some points here before the end of the half, but it was an interception, another turnover, then an interception. And it was just those types of plays that can kill momentum and stop teams from getting off the starts like that. But Spencer, speaking of one-dimensional offenses, some people are kind of arguing now that with, you know, J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards out of the fold, the running game has taken a step back. And I mean, look, those guys are a big part of this offense. So obviously the run game's going to take a step back. But we haven't really seen that burst this season that we've seen in previous years and that people have gotten accustomed to. And for example, on Sunday night against Cleveland, the Ravens running backs averaged just 2.7 yards per carry combined. So Spencer, as the season kind of goes down the line here, and as we kind of get into December football and some January football, How big are big runs for this Ravens team? Because we've seen running backs be kind of effective in short yardage situations, picking up some of the yardage they need, but we haven't seen those 15, 20, 30 yard runs over the course of the season.
Well, you'd say that they're certainly very important. And at the same time, it's impractical to expect them from Latavius Murray and Devontae Freeman. They aren't the types that have a ton of speed overall. And really, Murray can run away from guys a little bit more than Freeman can. But teams are playing the run. Teams are loading the box. They're fitting gaps well. They've seen the Ravens offense a lot. And neither of those guys are as explosive in space and able to accelerate and go through third, fourth, and fifth gear the way that Lamar Jackson can. So if he's not going to be the one to get it, I think it's unreasonable to expect them to consistently really get any of them. They have shown some really nice moments. I think that they're a really successful rushing attack overall. I think that they convert in short yardage situations. They do a really nice job there. They, you know, Latavius Murray's kind of that zombie shark type runner with no mind and just hits the hole he's supposed to hit and runs through it as hard as he can. He'll run into his own lineman, he'll run into your lineman, he'll run through somebody. He's going to hit that hole as hard as he can possibly hit it. So you appreciate that, but at the same time, he's not going to make guys miss. It's never been his game. And Devontae Freeman, love what he does in the run game in terms of setting guys up. He's had some pretty filthy jukes and jump cuts, ability to stay neutral and square and use the inside and outside jump cut and string a couple cuts together. Made a ton of guys miss at this point, but can't run away from guys in space. He's just not that player at this point in his career. So not going to be the case. They would love to factor in Tyson Williams more. They gave him a couple snaps again in this one, and he kind of didn't have a ton of decisiveness in a throw to the flats that Lamar Jackson's trying to, you know, swing the ball to him, and he's not really looking back or ready or making himself pass ready or throw ready or catch ready for Jackson, so that he's the one guy that might have a little bit more explosiveness. But it feels like the Ravens just really don't trust him to execute right now at all. He doesn't get a lot of run on special teams either. So I think that speaks to what they kind of think of him right now. And thinking about a guy like Justice Hill and how he was a punt return gunner and he was on kick return and kickoff and returning and punt and, you know, all these different things. So the trust isn't there with Williams. He might be the one who could do some of those things, but if you don't trust him in pass pro, you don't trust him to do his job in the pass game. You don't trust him to, you know, finish plays and run through the whistle and block the way that he's supposed to, and maybe his knowledge of the playbook and things like that, then it is what it is. So as long as this Ravens run game can be successful in converting first downs, they're fine. And you also have to look to guys like Devin Duvernay, who have seen some jet sweeps and some jet sweep passes and some screens and some RPOs. Those are all extensions of the run game. Devontae Freeman's had done a nice job in the last couple weeks of being throw ready, being all those things that I said Tyson Williams has not done a good job doing. And that's an extension of the run game. So continuing to be able to be successful and hit defenses where they don't have numbers is a big part of it. And it's just the reality that the Ravens live in. If they had one of Gus Edwards or J.K. Dobbins to take, you know, 60, 70, 80% of these snaps, they would probably have 20 to 30, if not 40% more of what they've currently had in terms of 15 plus yard runs. I think that would be almost doubling what they've had. And again, it's just going to be Lamar Jackson's going to be the only one that has the true speed and vision combination to go make defenses pay, but he's getting keyed on. And without J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards, knowing that Murray and Freeman aren't going to really kill you, you're going to key on Jackson in the run game a little bit more. So Jackson's continued to do a nice job in the run game. Of course, he converts first downs and picks up key situations, but this run game is kind of, it's a very workman-like run game. And if you go back and, you know, you look at the stats, say, oh, they only average this per carry, but they got 4 yards when they needed 4 yards. They got 3 yards when they needed 3 yards. So as long as they're able to go convert, then they're getting the job done. It's just going to be a little bit more pressure on the pass game and the short pass game, especially to create these positive situations as a result. And that's the unfortunate reality right now. I'm not going to lie. I thought there might be, you know, some sort of miraculous comeback ability for one of the running backs or something after 4 or 5 months. We've seen it occasionally here and there with some players, but not going to be the case this year. J.K. Dobbins does seem like someone who's made out of vibranium, but it's going to be next year. So at the end of the day, have to continue to have that workmanlike run game, put their heads down, put their hard hats on, grab their lunch pail and go to work.
Yeah, what a story it would be if let's say it was Dobbins who could have returned and kind of put the Ravens in a position to really up their run game in those 15, 20, 30-yard runs. But yeah, I agree, Spencer. The short pass game is key, especially I know so many people talk about it as an extension of the run game. And so you can use that to your advantage. But I'd like to see them run a bit better on first down. You know, it seems like their first down runs can sometimes be they'll get 1 yard or they'll get no yards, and then they're put in second and long situations. And then, you know, they don't put themselves in those big third and one situations to go out and get those 1 or 2 yards. So I think that's one thing I'd like to see them improve on in the run game, definitely. But we'll head into our first break. Let me get back. We'll be talking about the Ravens defense in Baltimore, 16-10 win over the Browns. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. In life, we're all bound for different things. With beachbound.com vacations, you could be bound for adventure, bound for passion, bound for discovery, or bound for togetherness, bound for immersion, bound for rejuvenation, or maybe you're just bound for encountering the unexpected. With beachbound.com, you can find the perfect beach vacation for you no matter what you're looking for. What are you bound for? Visit beachbound.com today. We've returned here our second segment of this Tuesday edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher here with Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. And Spencer, this Ravens defense has been phenomenal pretty much over these last few weeks. A few big plays given up here or there, but overall, they have looked like a great unit, all things considered. And in this game against Cleveland, giving up just 10 points. And the first thing I want to talk to you about is this run defense, because coming into this game without Calais Campbell, obviously going up against Cleveland, who coming into this game with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt coming back from injury, ranked number one in yards per carry, number one in yards, number one in rushing touchdowns, and just fifth in attempts. This was the best rush offense in the NFL, and Baltimore stifled them 2.4 yards per carry allowed. They have Nick Chubb held to just 2 yards a carry. How were they able to have such an impressive performance against such a good run defense without one of their key defensive linemen?
It felt like the Ravens really have ID'd the Browns' alignments and run strengths based off of it. We saw Patrick Queen, and we saw Marlon Humphrey at times. We saw Josh Pine, Christian Welch, different linebackers, different safeties at times, able to shoot gaps and anticipate where the ball was going to be and or where the concept was going to go and able to shoot it. So I think that they definitely did a great job in film study and were able to have a really strong feel for where the Browns wanted to run the ball and how to. And you also have to give credit to Odafe Owe for continuing to seal his side and force plays back inside. Tyus Bowser did a great job. Justin Houston did a great job. Brandon Williams comes back for the first time in a long time and is able to navigate and dictate the center. And that's what he has been paid for a long time, is to simply beat up on centers and not allow them to combo and work to the second level. So it was a full 11-man effort, and they did a great job of treating, you know, kind of the Browns run game like they treated the Titans run game in the playoffs last year, where it's going to be an 11-man job, where it's going to be situations where you have to beat blocks and key very quickly, eyes up, aware of motion, aware of the concept and where the ball is going to go. It's not an overly complex run game, especially with a lot of these zone concepts and split blocking concepts. They just want to line up and push you off the ball. And I was pretty surprised. I thought that the Ravens were going to lose this game and struggle without Calais Campbell. And also Brandon Williams, maybe Brandon Williams, you know, was pretty hurt or pretty injured for a while, because he looked a lot better. He's had a long time to rest the rest of his body aside from that shoulder. So having him back and playing at a high level, and hopefully having Calais Campbell back, and having a guy like Justin Madubuike, who really is a terrible matchup for Wyatt Teller, the Browns all-pro right guard who just got a market-setting contract. Justin Madubuike in back-to-back contests has given him the business in terms of being able to lock out with a long arm and drive him into the backfield. Madubuike plays with such good leverage. This was a game where they needed him to be strong, and he was. And we saw him flying around the ball, making plays, creating penetration, stalemating, getting off the block and going and making a play downfield. So the Ravens defensive front was awesome. They communicated well. They had a good game plan. And they frankly didn't fear the Browns' passing attack. They let up a couple deep completions, one to Harrison Bryant, I think one to Austin Hooper, and one to Jarvis Landry. So they didn't have any faith in the Browns' pass game ability to be consistent and make them pay it all. They played man coverage. They don't have anyone that strikes the fear of God into you as a separator in man coverage. So the Ravens time and time again played one-on-one football on the back end and took care of business in the run game. And they do let up a big play to a tight end because they just straight up disrespected the Browns' ability to push the ball downfield at all. The Browns hit a little play action out of a heavy package to Harrison Bryant downfield, and they made him pay at the end of the catch. But man, oh man, the Ravens just didn't have a single shred of faith that the Browns were going to be able to make them pay. And they did a couple times, and there was a throw early on where Baker Mayfield failed to hit Donovan Peoples-Jones in stride. Chuck Clark is able to go jar the ball out. I think there might have been a penalty on that one anyway, but they just didn't have any faith in the Browns to be able to make them pay, so they didn't. And you got to credit Wink Martindale, credit Anthony Weaver, credit Rex or Rob Ryan, and credit everybody for coming up and making plays on those guys in space. I think Patrick Queen was outstanding, and we saw a good bit of Christian Welch as well. So those guys are going to be interesting pieces moving forward. Being able to have maybe a fresher Calais Campbell too, who we hope he's okay with his concussion and that's not lingering and he's not having any terrible side effects from it, both as a football player and a person. But having him able to kind of take some of the wear and tear off of maybe his ligaments and his joints and any muscular damage there. So letting him get a little bit fresh to go play Pittsburgh. And I mean, he's been a great pass rusher as well. He hasn't really had the sacks. He has the most pressures and the most quarterback hits of any player in football that doesn't have a sack yet, but it's gotta be coming at some time soon. So getting him back against the Steelers, you know, might not need to happen. The Steelers offensive line that's banged up, Ben Roethlisberger struggling a lot and really immobile at this point in time. So I wouldn't be shocked to see Calais Campbell get another week off if that concussion's lingering at all, and see if you can't have Campbell healthy going down the stretch a little bit more when you're sitting at first place in the AFC and you're not really in these win or die situations yet. So having him healthy in those situations could be a certain benefit when a guy like Justin Madubuike, a guy like Brandon Williams, a guy like Broderick Washington and Justin Ellis have been really strong. So it would be interesting to see if Campbell comes back and for that Browns rematch, where the Browns are going to go lick their wounds and put the tape of the Ravens game on repeat and go try and hit the Ravens with some wrinkles and see if they can get their past game rejuvenated a little bit. Baker can get a little bit more healthy. That heel looked like it was really troubling him. His entire foot was wrapped. Like he must've been wearing a cleat that was two sizes too big with how much tape they had on his heel. So it's been a really nice development. The Ravens, an elite run stopping unit this year. No one really talks about the fact that the last team that shut down Jonathan Taylor completely was the Baltimore Ravens. Held him, I think, 56 yards rushing on somewhere around 15, 16, 17 carries. Of course, there was the big screen play, which is an extension of the run game, but that wasn't them lining the ball up, blocking downhill on you and making you pay. So this Ravens run defending unit is a stellar surprise last night. And considering some of the struggles that they have had, they've done an outstanding job so far. And it's you know, got to give credit where credit's due there. They've let up some big runs here and there. Dalvin Cook busted a 66-yarder, but other than that, completely shut down the Vikings run game. And it's been a, you know, litany of really good backs they faced. They're going to have to play the Bengals again later in the year, and that's kind of the one team that really had their way with them with a couple late runs after the game had already been decided a little bit, but the Bengals were able to seal that one out and completely put a fork in it there. So I think this defense is coming along really nicely. They're tackling better. They're playing more confidently. They're playing smarter, and they've developed as the season has wore on. At this point, the defense, aside from kind of one late drive against the Dolphins, has kind of pitched four quarters of good football. And I guess you could say one play against the Bears as well. So they let up a couple chunk plays, but certainly not in the run game. And the Browns couldn't throw the ball. They can't really throw the ball effectively with any consistency. And the Ravens sent them packing with a pretty meager defensive or offensive performance.
Yeah, and when you are talking about attacking this Cleveland offense, you start with the run game, because I agree where, you know, you have an injured quarterback in Baker Mayfield. Odell Beckham's not there anymore, and, you know, whether that's a good or a bad thing for them, there are varying opinions on that. But I still think that they did such a phenomenal job without, again, as we talked about, Calais Campbell and just what he brings to this defense. So as you talked about a bit there, Spencer, if he does rest for one more week, comes back when the Ravens travel to Cleveland, then, you know, they could put together maybe even a better defensive performance against the Browns in that game. But you mentioned Patrick Queen, and I do want to talk to you about him a little bit, because we had talked a few weeks earlier, probably about a month and a half ago, when Patrick Queen was still struggling a little bit, and we both had preached patience on him. The Ravens, they put Josh Bynes into a bigger role. They move Patrick Queen to a role that they think better suits him. And look, he's played phenomenal football. I think kind of all coming together for this game against Cleveland, where he just looked, as you talked about, just outstanding, excellent, was flying around the field, making great tackles. He played great. What has been the key for Patrick Queen, Spencer, in your opinion, to really turn it on these past couple of weeks and be the player that I think a lot of people know that he can be?
Well, the Ravens did what they should have done last year with an inexperienced but extremely athletic and talented player, and that's take a little bit off his plate. They put Josh Bynes in the role of communicator, in the role of what they call Mike linebacker there. And while that does change around a little bit, depending on certain looks and certain fronts, they took some off of his plate. They stopped putting him in on third down passing situations. They stopped putting him in the red zone, especially when not in goal to go situations, and simplified his role. So essentially he was playing the base when teams come out in 12, 23, you know, or 12, 13, 11 or 21 and 22 personnel. Patrick Queen's on the field, especially on first and second down, and doing so kind of between the 20s, so to speak. So not doing that in the red area. That way they simplified his role, let him get a really firm grasp on what he needed to do in the base structure of this defense and where majority of the football is played. And then from there, they allowed him to master that role a little bit and then slowly add more to his plate to the point where he's the one who isn't really coming off the field now, leading the Ravens linebackers in snaps again the last couple weeks. So he's also done a better job on the field in terms of trusting his athleticism and trusting other players on his teammates to go make plays and trusting them to take care of their responsibility, not over-pursuing, not running out of his gap, not vacating his zone. He's played calmer, and that's a good thing because he's a four-star running back. In high school, he ran for like 2,000 yards, I think playing 6A football in Louisiana his senior year, and had like 15 touchdowns. He runs, you know, low 4.5. He's an explosive jumper in the vertical. I'm sure if he didn't kind of get a little hamstring injury, he would have been able to finish his combine and have a really high RAS. Well, his is a little bit incomplete, but he's a, you know, a premier athlete in the world and in the NFL, of course, as well. So playing patiently, allowing plays to develop a little bit without vacating when he has an opportunity to, when in pursuit, not completely committing his eyes and his shoulder pads and his hips and his feet to the sideline in pursuit, instead keeping, you know, his eyes squared back while running that way, or keeping his, you know, body back inside while he's looking. So being able to stay neutral, stay square to the line of scrimmage. And it feels like his film study has just continued to get better. I know that he said he reached out to Ray Lewis about his routine in terms of staying in shape and trying to get stronger during the season. So it looks exactly that. He did have, I think PFF gave him 2 missed tackles. I have now watched the game through once and I saw 1. So we'll go back through once the All-22 comes out and comb for that second one. But those were the first times he's missed a tackle since the Indianapolis Colts game. So just staying patient, staying square, staying neutral, playing with your athleticism once you're confident what happens. And we saw him a couple times really quickly diagnose plays and read his keys and go run blitz, go on the opening drive for the Browns, go shoot the gap and stop Nick Chubb in the backfield. So being able to do some of those things, playing with a lot more confidence, confident in that role, especially in those base defenses, and alleviating some of the pressure of playing in the red area as well as playing on third down has done wonders for him. And I think he's going to continue to grow and be a really good football player in this league. And we've seen him deal with, you know, the poor performances, and sometimes he's had some comments about things that are said about him and things of that nature, but he's been able to rebound from it. He's ultra confident in himself and his athletic ability. So having him, having Odafe Owe, having Tyus Bowser, having, you know, it was nice when they had Deshaun Elliott. Hopefully Brandon Stevens can continue to improve. He's had a rough couple weeks, but having guys that are versatile and have somewhat similar body types overall, kind of similar physical style in terms of movement ability and speed and versatility in different ways is going to pay off in the long run. The Ravens are playing a positionless defense, as Wink Martindale strives to do, and it's really started to pay dividends. These guys can pursue when they play within, you know, structure and play within their fundamentals. They can pursue like bats out of hell, and we've seen it quite a few times now, especially last week and this week. So I think those guys are going to continue to get better. Patrick Queen's going to continue to get better. He's peaking at the right time. He's getting better at the right time. He's improving. He's developing. And he's only 22 years old, so he's really started to look like a first-round player the last couple of weeks. I think there's still a pretty big misconception that, oh, he plays Will linebacker, and that's not as important as the mic. And Will is supposed to mean weak side linebacker. And if you go watch, go look at where the tight ends are. Go look at, you know, the run strength. That's where the mic is supposed to line up. It's fluid. Those guys switch all the time. The offense will do a reset, and the linebackers don't change. Or there'll be a motion, and the linebackers don't change. So I think there's a little bit more to the mic. I think it's more of the play calling responsibility. or more so the setting of the front and communicating with the defensive line and then to the back end and being the one who's relaying that and not having to do that as much. That's allowed Queen to think about his assignment, his role, his responsibility a lot more. So within that, he's grown, he's developed, he's continued to get better. And I think we're looking at a really good player right now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree. And it's about, you know, trusting, especially in a positionless defense, trusting the people next to you, trusting the guy that next to you. He can go make a tackle or he can get the guy in a situation where you can go make the tackle. And I always compare it back to the C.J. Mosley, Patrick Owosso situation where you had Mosley and Owosso where, you know, Owosso was playing great next to the veteran of Mosley. Then Mosley leaves, Owosso gets the green dot, and he just didn't play well. So sometimes you need that veteran. I think Josh Bynes in his addition and in his insertion into the defense has been great for Queen, and Queen knew he had to play better than what he was doing. He knows the player he is and what he can be. And look, he's taken it upon himself, and he's really improved, so I've been very impressed with him, and I'm looking forward to seeing him, I think, growing really, really nicely over the course of his NFL career. We'll head into our final break, though. When we get back, we'll be talking a bit about the Ravens' Week 13 matchup with the Pittsburgh Steelers, so stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. BetOnline is who covered all season long with more props, odds, and lies than ever before as football season continues to march on to the playoffs. BetOnline remains the number one spot for all the sports action this season. Head to our new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus. From basketball, football, NHL, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. We are back. Our final segment of this Taco Tuesday edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher, your host, still here with Spencer Schultz. And Spencer, the Ravens sitting 8-3. They're atop not only the AFC North, but atop the entire AFC Conference. They now head to Pittsburgh to take on those Pittsburgh Steelers, a team that is kind of reeling a little bit, but their defense has, you can argue, has given Lamar Jackson the most trouble throughout his NFL career so far, with a couple of games where we have seen turnovers from him, multiple turnovers in multiple games. So how do you see this Ravens team matching up with Pittsburgh as they hope to get their ninth win on the year?
Well, you're exactly right. The Steelers have given Lamar Jackson a lot of trouble with their dynamic pass rush typically, and they kind of play that five-man front where they're going to have a man for a gap, and they're going to be gap penetrating, and it's a pretty, you know, old school front that has turned out to continue to be able to be modified into the new age. They like to run some zone blitzes, but this unit is not the same as they have been. They were without Joe Hayden last week, who is still a really strong corner and kind of the man of that cornerback room. And now they could potentially be without TJ Watt, who's placed on the COVID list. I think if he is vaccinated, then he could come back for game time without practicing this week. So he's played against the Ravens a couple of times, but they're also now without Melvin Ingram, who they traded away. They could be without TJ Watt. Cam Hayward has continued to be a really dominant player, but especially if there's a situation where there's no TJ Watt, you're going to be able to dedicate a lot of resources to throwing kind of the kitchen sink at Cam Hayward, who is still one of the best interior defensive linemen in football. But going and looking at the pressure numbers for what that defensive front has generated, they only have five players that have generated 10 or more pressures, which is very, very low. They have Melvin Ingram is still the fourth most on the team with 18. The next is Chris Wormley with 13, and no one else has more than six. So this pass rush has been really revolving around TJ Watt and Cam Hayward. TJ Watt only has 29 total pressures, but 12 of them have been sacks. He obviously is a very good finisher and can win very cleanly when he does. Alex Highsmith, an up-and-coming player, but someone who's been really thrusted into a real full-time role and is athletic, and we saw him make an interception against Lamar Jackson last year and some things, but this defense doesn't really strike fear into opponents the same way that they have in years past. Devin Bush has really struggled. Minkah Fitzpatrick is still an outstanding football player. They, you know, have Chris Wormley, who has played a ton and done a nice job, former Baltimore Raven, good run, you know, defending, strong three-tech, five-tech type player. So there's still some definite players there, but Joe Schobert has not been what they wanted him to be. Devin Bush has been a real disappointment for them. And overall, they've had a ton of struggles. I mean, Minkah Fitzpatrick has been able to ball hawk a little bit, but it's also getting picked on a lot with him not really being as great in man coverage as he has been in years past, but still doing a lot as free safety and able to have some range and some things of that nature. They still have Terrell Edmonds and some guys, Robert Spillane and some other guys that are playing a ton of snaps, but just not really incredibly effective. It feels like they definitely don't have as much talent as they've had. I think that Mike Hilton was an underrated loss for them, who has a pick six against them this past week. And it's a slot corner that did a lot for them in the run game, as well as an underneath zone, a really smart player who's an outstanding blitzer as well. Probably the best blitzing slot corner of the last like 5 or 10 years. So big loss for them. And they, you know, had Melvin Ingram come in. It worked a little bit, and then they get rid of him. So they kind of sold on their own defense. And then in terms of looking at the offensive side of the football, Ben Roethlisberger is pretty much the most limited kind of passer in the NFL at this point. It's either 7 yards and underneath, quick timing, getting the ball out in under 2.4 seconds, or it's trying to float, you know, a nine route to Chase Claypool and trying to time these moon balls down the sideline, which works a couple times a game. You know, they've had a little bit of success there, but Deontay Johnson, really dangerous after the catch, a guy great separation early and often, and super dangerous after the catch. I don't think him and Marquise Brown are terribly dissimilar players. Johnson, obviously a little bigger, maybe not quite as nuanced in ways, but stronger, maybe a little better after the catch, and has had a lot of success in the NFL. So him, Pat Freiermuth, Chase Claypool, obviously I'm a big fan of Najee Harris, who is my number one running back over the last like few drafts. I think he's been really strong, but they're hurting right now. They don't have Kevin Dotson, who was kind of their bread and butter offensive lineman, who the last game he played was in Detroit in week 10 and has been probably their best pass protector and is able to move some bodies in the run game. A really aggressive kind of Kelechi Osemele when he was a little younger type body that is super athletic, but they're without him right now. So they don't really have the names on their offensive line. Their rookie center Kendrick Green has been super up and down. Chukwuma Okafor has been consistently inconsistent, is the best way to put it. I think he has 8 penalties so far this year. Chase Claypool actually has 7, and they've had a lot of holding calls. Kendrick Green 7 as well. So they've struggled in the holding department a little bit. They want to try to be physical, but they're just super limited. And I think that the Ravens last year in that COVID matinee matchup on Wednesday afternoon exposed them. They were undefeated at that point. The next week they played Washington and lost, and have had a lot of trouble offensively since that. And understanding how to play 5 underneath coverage and kind of funnel them and make sure that they're not able to run after the catch, and switching and doing some different things, and where you're able to spot drop some of the time, and force Ben Roethlisberger to get the ball out, because he might be the highest paid player in American professional sports, or maybe even all professional sports, who can't really run. I mean, he can barely jog at this point. So he is hanging on by a thread. The Steelers are tough. Mike Tomlin's a great coach, but Roethlisberger is to their detriment. Their defense isn't as deep or as kind of devastating as it has been. They still have some talent, but they're not really oozing at all three levels with guys that strike the fear of God into you. So I predicted very early on that the Ravens would sweep the Steelers. I think I said that in like April or March. So I'm going to stick with that. I think the Ravens are going to be able to take care of business. The Steelers' run defense has been dreadful. If TJ Watt can't play, they're asking some, you know, Derek Tuska, who's a very inexperienced player, someone I did have a high grade on coming out relative to where he was drafted, but he's played 115 total snaps this year, and someone with short arms, and has really struggled to tackle in the open field. So I'm not sure that they're really going to be able to generate a lot of pressure at all. And it's really going to be a tough situation for the Pittsburgh Steelers, who are reeling right now, coming off of a huge loss. I think that the book is kind of out on them, and they're trying to fight against it, but there's just not many adjustments that they can make offensively because of Ben Roethlisberger's limitations, because of their offensive line's limitations in the run game. So it's, you know, doing their best to be creative with screens and motion and quick passing, but everybody's seen it, and it's what they do every week. So they're a very one-dimensional offense in the pass game. Najee Harris can do some really nice things after the catch, and if he does get a hole and a crease, but with the way the Ravens run defense has been and the way the Ravens defense has been as of late and the struggles at the same time, I mean, those are all trending for the Steelers to really struggle yet again against this Ravens defense. So I don't foresee things going very well for them. They do have the fact that they're in Pittsburgh and Heinz Field, and the grass there is a little funky, and you can't really kick from very deep there, even though Tucker has, I think, their stadium record. But I just don't see the Steelers being able to hang on, other than the fact that Mike Tomlin keeps them really well prepared. And if you don't play, you know, your A game, they will be able to come be well coached and stay in it. But Ben Roethlisberger to this point is just, kind of sad to watch. I don't think there's a ton of excitement around that offense at all. I think the players could get dejected very early. And I think they are probably, you know, trying to push through, but feeling a little bit frustrated, a little bit kind of, you know, helpless to a degree. But the same team was able to go beat the Ravens in Baltimore. They were able to pick off Lamar Jackson and force fumbles and force him to second guess himself and all these things that have reared their head over the last 2 years here. So I think that it's time for Lamar Jackson to have a sickness-free week of practice and get back to practice, get timed up with Rashad Bateman a little better, feel the rhythm of throwing the football and going through the motions there and timing and discussing and being on the practice field and being around his guys. So I've been thinking it's time for Lamar Jackson to finally really tear into the Steelers team, into the Steelers defense, and I think that's what's going to happen. I thought that they would struggle with the Browns, who are a much more talented team, especially defensively, and now they're looking at a Steelers defense that could be without, you know, one of the top five edge rushers in the NFL and doesn't have a ton else other than Minkah Fitzpatrick and Cam Hayward. So it kind of reminds you of the Bears a little bit, and it looked like that the Ravens with Lamar Jackson, if we saw the good Lamar Jackson, would have been able to blow the doors off of them. And, you know, the Ravens definitely missed some opportunities in Cleveland, so they need to capitalize. They can't miss easy throws. They can't run backwards behind the first down marker like we saw Marquise Brown do. They can't second guess themselves. They can't hesitate. They can't commit penalties in untimely situations. So it's going to be a dogfight. It's the AFC North. It's the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's the Baltimore Ravens. But all things are pointing to the Ravens being able to handle them.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Spencer. I also very early on had the Ravens sweeping the Steelers. I'm sticking with you. I'm saying that the Ravens will get two on the Steelers team, especially considering what Ben Roethlisberger has showed this season. You talked about the defense not really being what people have been accustomed to over these last couple of years. So, yeah, I think this is a game where Baltimore can finally kind of do some great things against the Steelers team, where we've seen over the past couple of seasons Lamar Jackson really struggle against that defense. But Spencer, that's all I have for you today. Thank you so much once again for joining me here on the show. What's on the docket for you this week as the Ravens head into Week 13?
We're doing Watch It Wednesday. On Wednesday, going back through this Browns tape, looking at the interceptions, looking at the run defense, looking at Mark Andrews, looking at Patrick Queen, all the fun storylines there. So you can join me on the Baltimore Beatdown YouTube. It's been a little bit funny with the holidays and things lately, but getting back to it, I'll be posting content on Twitter at Ravens4Dummies. I'll be posting articles at BaltimoreBeatdown.com, and I'll be kind of looking at Patrick Queen and Mark Andrews as two players that I think are really starting to come along, and talking about maybe an interesting situation with Matt Judon and Yannick Ngakoue going and having some success. And then the Ravens having Odafe Oweh, Tyus Bowser, and Justin Houston, who have also had success. So looking at kind of the storylines and narratives there and the replay of those respective individuals, as well as the Ravens as a whole. So that's what I have on the docket, and I appreciate the shout out and all the links and everything. Thanks for having me on, Kevin. Please go reward Kevin by sharing this podcast with a friend who likes the Ravens or who likes NFL football. Please go give him 5 stars in the Apple charts, the iTunes reviews, and in iTunes and podcasts and all that good stuff, and reward the man who gives you the best daily Ravens coverage. Thanks again, Kevin, and I will talk to you guys next week.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Spencer. I do appreciate it. And of course, the links to Spencer's work will be in the description below if you're following along with us on YouTube. So be sure to subscribe, like the video. Of course, it all helps out with the YouTube algorithm. But that's all that I have for you today on Locked On Ravens. When we get back here tomorrow, we'll be answering your mailbag questions. So stay tuned for that, and I will see you tomorrow.